Right, Adam's literally psyching himself up there. Look at him.
Yeah, I have. I was literally about, I think about half five, between half five and half six, I was sleeping. I was having a nap.
And, your professionalism, Corey, knows no bounds, I tell you.
I'd have a drink to calm the nerves.
Yeah, I did that last season. And I wasn't the only one. A few of our guests did that as well. I'd have a coffee to wake me up and to get me going.
How things have changed, Corey.
Yes, this is what lockdown's doing to me. I'm a student though, as well. I'm a student, so I'm allowed to do stuff like this.
Yeah.
All right, let's begin. Paul, Corey. Episode one with Ben and Kieran was absolutely phenomenal. I don't normally ever do this, but I checked the numbers in terms of downloads and people have listened, and it's been absolutely blowing through the roof. Like, I was not expecting this. I've been texting you at one point a daily, saying, it's this number now. I'm not gonna disclose it, because
I was getting the impression you're quite excited about it.
I am absolutely buzzing. But Kieran and Ben were absolutely amazing, weren't they?
I thought they were fantastic, and I think what they're doing with the Northeast Project run, certainly in terms of the amount of time that they're devoting to their athletes and the individual approach to each athlete. So it's not that traditional club approach that we've discussed. But the fact that they invest in their athletes and give them individual plans, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. And some of the stuff they kind of mentioned, I think definitely translates over to the rehab setting and the prehab setting as well, which is some of the stuff we're going to mention. So I thought last season we got a couple of experts on in Ryan and Andrew, and I thought this season we'll get some more, kind of get maybe a different perspective on the different things, but also talk about maybe the injuries in a bit more detail. So today I've got on John Flynn from John Flynn Physio, and I've got his
sidekick. Is the word sidekick you're looking for?
Sidekick. Word there. Colleague is the word I was thinking of. I'll go sidekick. Jack
Petroni. I prefer sidekick.
Sidekick, like Robin and Batman.
Okay. I was going to say, I'll take that. As long as you're Robin.
So, people are listening and aren't aware who John Flynn and Jack Petroni are. I'll start with you, John. Do you want to just talk about your background in terms of how you became a physio and what led you to run your own clinic now?
Yeah, so I qualified 5 years ago. I studied at Manchester Metropolitan Uni. Following uni, I went in to work at a hospital. So I did my rotations at a hospital in Manchester. After that, I went on to work in a private clinic. So I built up a bit of MSK knowledge, which is all of your sports injuries that we're dealing with and talking about today. Following that, I obviously decided to come back and set up my own clinic, which brings us obviously to where we are today. But yeah, it's all going well at the new clinic. Get a good mix of injuries with working in an MSK clinic like we're doing now. And that was always the plan really at the start.
What was it like setting up your own clinic? Was there any major barriers you had to overcome to get it up and running?
I mean, it was always a risk right at the start. It was always a risk setting up, going from a sort of a paid job, taking the risk of obviously earning no money and not seeing any patients coming through the door is always a worry. But it got off the ground okay. There's always barriers, but we've managed to get past most of them so far, including the pandemic, touch wood.
Well, you're doing an excellent job, I must say, mate. Go on, Paul.
Cheers.
Yeah, I was going to say, just for complete novices like me, MSK, is that musculoskeletal?
Yeah, so musculoskeletal. Yeah. So it's any sort of sporting injuries, your back pain, shoulder pain, things that you would go in to your GP and they would then refer you to physio, and that's right. The sort of injuries we tend to see.
Ah, brilliant. Okay, cool.
Yeah, the most common ones. So, Jack, what about you, mate? How did you end up joining John?
Yeah, I'm far more fresh. I'm straight out of uni. I qualified in sport rehabilitation from the University of Salford in 2019, it was. And I did a few placements. I did one at Salford Red Devils Rugby League side, which was interesting. And I did one at Home House Prison in Stockton. And then I spent some time with John at his private clinic. And we sort of got chatting there. I really enjoyed it. And then I got a message off John a few months after sort of qualifying. and he just asked if I wanted to sort of come in and sort of work there. And it's back from there, really, and it's going strong, it's going well.
You must have made a good impression then, mate.
I must have, I think. You have to ask him that, actually.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I won't big him up too much. No, he's still making a good impression now. He's doing well.
Yeah, good to hear. So on today's episode, we're obviously going to be talking about particular running injuries, how best to manage them. We're also going to dive, well, we can't avoid it, the COVID-19 pandemic and what the impact it has on people's physical health. Because obviously, we can't go out and train in gyms and meet up in groups and things like that. And obviously, football games, unfortunately, have been postponed. John, you play for the team I look after, and Jack, you obviously look after Newton Aycliffe as well.
Yeah.
And obviously, the impact it has on that. So I asked the lads for kind of a list of common injuries. And I think I'm best just going to leave it to you guys and let you talk about the most common run injuries you come across in the clinic.
Yeah, that's no problem. I'll get us started. Me and Jack sat down and obviously had a chat about all the injuries that come in, and obviously the list's as long as your arm. Especially for runners, unfortunately, you tend to pick up a fair few injuries. Again, we made a list sort of going through, picked a few that we'd seen since the start of the pandemic, because I thought that was quite a good starting point. So I'll get us started. The first one that came to mind was IT band injuries. So your IT band is your iliotibial band. For those of you that don't know, it's the band of fascia down the outside of your thigh, between your hip and the outside of the knee. The reason I started with this one is because during the first pandemic, first lockdown, I saw a handful of these within a few weeks. So it was sort of the most common thing that I actually saw from runners or people who were new to running during the lockdown. So yeah, basically it presents as pain on the outside of the knee, usually. It's sometimes known as IT band friction syndrome. So the band of fascia on the outside of the knee can rub, cause pain and inflammation. And that's when people tend to get in touch with ourselves. Obviously running, you continually flex and extend the knee, which is the main cause of it. During overload of running or a change in running frequency or duration is quite often the trigger. There's loads of things that can cause it. Like I mentioned, that they're the main things is a change in running load. But there are other things that can contribute to it, like the positioning of your knee and hip, so your biomechanics while you're running. Pronation at the foot can add to it. So that's your sort of flat-footed posture. That some runners might be aware of if you've ever seen a podiatrist. I know how podiatrist John would have plenty to say on that front. So I mean, treatment-wise, we obviously have lots of treatments that we can use for it, but the main one, which I know Ryan and Andrew commented in your last podcast, was to do with strength and conditioning. Strength and conditioning is one of the main sort of treatments that we use when we get into dealing with injuries altogether. And like I say, we'll dig into that a little bit more in some of the individual injuries.
So you listened to the podcast then, John?
Yeah, we had a little listen earlier.
You had it on all day.
I didn't realise that you'd done one with a couple of physios already, so I was just making sure we didn't tread on the toes.
Oh, fair enough, mate.
But no, they made some good points, though. They made some good, really good points.
Yeah, I think that they did a brilliant job. And I think Ryan's, like you, very much a modern day physio in terms of his approach to dealing with injuries.
Yeah.
So that's what I call it. Ryan was drinking Hobgoblin, though, wasn't he, on the night of the podcast?
He was, yeah. So
I've just got into Hobgoblin myself. So I'm a bit
Yeah, we can blame them. They've inspired us. But yeah, I thought they made a few good points about obviously a few things, and they were talking about recovery as well. I know we'll obviously break down individual injuries, so we don't cross over too much. But yeah, the IT band injuries was the first thing I wanted to mention, and usually pain on the outside of the knee caused by an increase in running load.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you ever mentioned anything that's been mentioned on the previous episode, I think it's good because it reinforces the point, because it's that continuous education we have to give to runners, clients, or whatever. Because I'm a runner myself. I still make mistakes because even though I know a bit in what you guys are doing, obviously by studying physiotherapy, I still make the same mistakes again and again. So you can imagine someone who doesn't know maybe as much as me, you know.
So, yeah, I fully agree. I do a little bit of running myself, not as much as you, Corey. Nowhere near the same level. But yeah, we all make the same mistakes, don't we?
Yeah, we never seem to learn.
I know, even when you are qualified.
Jack, have you got one you want to talk about?
Yeah, obviously we've got a few listed down, but I don't think I've seen as many runners, whether they're novice or pretty serious, as John has. But one I've got down here is pretty vague, just hamstring injuries, especially in football. I know it's slightly different, but the guys in football, they do a lot of running at Ayr Club. I don't know what it's like at Darnow Town, but it's a lot of like cardiovascular fitness. And a lot of the time at Ayr Club, there's a lot of hamstring injuries. And mainly for hamstring injuries, because John will probably agree, a lot of the conditions that you'll see in running is more like an overuse injury, a chronic injury. Mm. But hamstring injuries, you've obviously got your tears, your grade 1, 2, 3 in terms of severity that can be a sudden, you know, acute injury. Leg in front, overstretched, and, you know, it can simple tear. Or you can get your sort of tendinopathy, sort of proximal hamstring tendinopathy type pain as well. So just vaguely, obviously, talking about those. Hamstring injuries is what I was going to mention first. But then after that, it was your your sort of chronic overuse type injury. So Achilles tendinopathies, stress fractures, and then patellofemoral pain syndrome, to finish on that as well. Obviously, we could talk for ages about that. But the one I was probably going to go into the most detail was that I've seen in clinic is the Achilles tendinopathy.
Mm-hmm.
So just obviously without naming names, got a guy who's been coming in and he's not much of a runner. He's more of a long distance walker, but it's similar in terms of overuse. Again, he's sort of walking for long distances, walking quite frequently as well. And he's had an Achilles tendinopathy pain for a good few months now. And that's because of an overuse injury. Obviously, you talk about risk factors. He's overweight. He's borderline diabetic. He's been told by his GP. Obviously, you talk about your serious runners, you probably won't have these type of issues because, you know, they're quite fit, they're quite out and about quite often. But the diabetes, overweight, footwear obviously plays a part as well. He's a typical sort of Achilles tendinopathy type patient. And we've been doing, again, what you've been talking about on your previous, when you had your previous physios on, your strength and conditioning, deloading initially,
yeah.
And then the strength back up and on, you know, just training and re-engaging that loading sort of side of it.
No, that's the thing you mentioned there, deloading. I think I'd like to go in a bit more detail about that because people, runners who I tend to see at the club, tend to, if they get an injury, they just stop completely. And that's not quite what deloading is. You still want them to kind of remain active, don't you?
Well, we did a bit of training on this, especially on tendinopathies, me and John, that it's not as simple as you've got a tendinopathy. So, you know, it's like a tendon continuum, you call it. So it's, you've got obviously your first stage where it's like a reactive tendinopathy where it might be quite acute. You've overdone it that previous week and, you know, it's a bit of a flare up in the back of the heel. This is obviously Achilles specific, I'm talking about, yeah. And then obviously if you keep working and keep loading that and you keep aggravating it, you'll get into that tendon disrepair phase where there's a little bit more damage to the tendon. It's not had that time off that it initially needs. And then obviously if you keep going and keep going, eventually down the line, you can get in that degenerative phase where, you know, it can be irreversible, the injuries that you can get. So the deloading's important, isn't it, at first, where you take a step back, look at what's aggravating it initially and reduce that. And then once you've done that, you get back on your conditioning and sort of work around the issues that you've been having.
Yeah, brilliant points. John, have you got anything to add, mate, on the back of any of that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know we always sort of use Achilles as the main go-to tendon because it's the one that we tend to see a lot of in clinic. And I'm sure if you chat to the runners at the running club, there'll be plenty of them that have had Achilles injuries at some point.
Mm-hmm,
but again, with deloading, we talk, people always use the term rest, don't they? And I don't know about Jack, but treating runners in general, they don't want to hear the word rest. It doesn't go down too well.
No, it doesn't.
Say rest for a couple of weeks. It's not what they want to hear. And to be honest, I don't think it's the best advice to give them. I think we need to modify what they're doing rather than getting them to rest. So trying to reduce it, reducing, like you say, repetitions or loads. And by load, we mean obviously sort of the resistance that the training, duration, frequency of running. The other thing that you can sort of add in, which I think the other physios commented on, is cross-training. So trying to find something else that you can do to get the same cardiovascular effects, things like obviously cycling, swimming, which is why I think a lot of runners end up going down the triathlon route at some point to try and help.
Yes, yeah, I've done that myself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it helps with, like I said, deloading, doesn't it, during your training, stops you from running too frequently when you are injured. So yeah, that's another way that you can do it.
Yeah. The reason why I was sort of pinpointing Achilles specifically, obviously without just brushing over the rest of them, but one of the clients who come in the clinic, he brought quite a good book on sort of strength and conditioning in runners. And I was having a read around it, and it was on about sort of areas of the body where runners might be more likely to be injured, sort of if they're especially quite serious runners and they're frequently out. And it was 30% at the foot and the ankle, and I think it was 20% lower leg. And then obviously it was getting lower and lower up towards the lower back where it was about 7%. So obviously it's the first point of contact when you're running. 2 to 3 times the body weight, I think it is, every time, every step you take as well. So there's a lot of sort of load going through your foot, ankle, Achilles. So that's why we're sort of pushing, thought more in terms of Achilles pain, because it's probably one of the most common anyway that I've seen.
So in terms of such common injuries, is there something you can do beforehand, such as prehab? I know we were mentioning this just beforehand, yeah. Sort of like, is it purely just strength and conditioning, or is there anything else that can be done to maybe strengthen it up so you don't become susceptible to any regular injuries?
I'll let sort of John come on to that first if he wants to, John, and then I'll sort of follow
up. Yeah, I mean, prehab is used usually before you go for some form of surgery, if you like, but strength and conditioning definitely. And obviously what we tend to do is we tend to advise people on increasing the load and resistance on specific movements or specific functional movement patterns that are involved in running. So obviously in different parts of your running gait, different muscles are working. So for example, at a certain point, the hamstring is working in an eccentric way. So we get people loading the hamstrings eccentrically, things like Romanian deadlifts, things along those lines. So you're targeting, you're using the muscle in the same way that it would be used while you're running. So really, yeah, specific movement patterns and loading it the same way that you would do in your running gait.
Yeah, I'd probably just follow on, like, pre-ab, it's right, but sort of pre-ab's more that before surgery, obviously, work that you have to do before going to surgery. In terms, obviously, some people might just go out and run and that's all they do, and they might have no problems with it, fair enough. But obviously, it's more maintenance than anything else. It's not necessarily pre-ab, it's sort of, what you're trying to look to do is progressively overload the tissue, so you just keep them moving. So whether it's through strength training, increasing your running frequency or volume gradually, you're not going from doing 7 days a week, you know, 5-10 miles, and then nothing for 3 weeks, and then doing it again, progressively building it up, doing strength training, you know, alongside that, like John's been talking about, the Romanian deadlift and everything else. And then if you do all those things together, then it gives you the best chance, really.
It does, yeah. And I think Johnny made a good point, making it specific to the movement of that person, like what they do. So obviously running, you've got the eccentric contractions of the hamstring, which I think a lot of runners, if they're doing any sort of, not through any fault of their own, they just do the simple squats, lunges, kind of those basic movement patterns. Where I did some today, some Romanian deadlifts. I think they're great, and I think that's maybe what I would recommend. If I think, well, obviously there's going to be a lot of runners listening to this, I hope anyway, that I'd look to do some sort of exercise targeting eccentric loading of the hamstrings, because like Jack, you mentioned there, hamstring injuries, I know that you're more common in footballers because of that that quick acceleration, deceleration phase all the time.
Yeah. Especially your tears, your grade 1, 3, 2, 3 tears, that sudden quick movement. Obviously, the runners who will be listening to this, I imagine, anyway, real time, yeah, it's more endurance runners who are staying at pace, not sort of, you know,
yeah,
running quick, slowing down, running quick. It's probably more steadier ways.
It is, but we do some speed sessions, so it is. It's definitely there. It's just obviously not as prevalent as footballers, for example, or any sort.
Your overuse injuries come more into where you're at a steady pace, but it's more the frequency or the volume that you're doing, as opposed to the, you know, the quick, slow type sort of interaction.
Just before we move on, is there anything else you guys want to add about any of the common running injuries you've come across?
I think obviously we've covered sort of muscular injuries. There's obviously the calf, which I know we've covered Achilles, and the muscular injuries you get in the hamstring are obviously similar to what you can get in the calf. The difference, obviously, your soleus is a muscle, which is a deep muscle in the calf, takes about 50% of the load while you're running, which again, I'm sure a few runners have heard facts similar to that. But that obviously needs to be trained alongside some of the other muscles, so your gastrocnemius, obviously, further down into the Achilles, and the muscles further up the chain. You obviously, calf tears are common. You can get the pain into sort of the musculotendinous junction, we call it, which is sort of the bit between the Achilles and the fatter part of the calf muscle at the top, in non-scientific terms.
I understand that bit.
Yeah, good. Another common one that I've seen a lot of, and I'm dealing with a couple of chronic tendon injuries at the moment, but your tibialis posterior, that's the tendon on the inside of the ankle. So again, some runners that have had sort of medial ankle pain that runs around the back of the ankle's bone, quite often is your tibialis posterior. Again, it's similar. It's linked to pronation of the foot. It's linked to a valgus knee position, which is where your knee drops inwards while you're running. And obviously then every time the foot hits the ground, the knee drops in, and that can increase the amount of load going through that tendon. So that is quite a common one that we see. And rehab-wise, I tend to use quite a lot of unilateral exercises. So single-legged exercises, focusing on trying to control that movement pattern that we were chatting about, trying to make sure that the foot, the knee, and the hip are all in a similar alignment while you're doing the exercise. And I find that they work quite well.
I must admit, one of the more regular ones I tend to hear about, and I know we touched upon it on the podcast in the last season, and I had a touch of it last year, was plantar fasciitis. And I think, is that associated with the calf as well?
Yeah. I mean, again, very similar. That's getting us right down to the bottom. Obviously, your plantar fascia is the part on the underside of the foot. It's on the bottom of the foot. Can be reported as some of the worst pain that some of our clients have mentioned, which I'm sure the runners will agree, anybody who's had it. And it can be a bit of a pest of an injury, really, to settle down. It can require a lot of different treatments, and can sometimes become quite a chronic injury. I'm sure there's a lot of runners that have tried the old iced can of pop, rolling it underneath the foot, and the foam rollers.
Golf balls.
And yeah, there's lots of different treatments for it, isn't there? Obviously, insoles. If you see a podiatrist, they might have a look at the position of your foot and give you insoles. I mean, in worst case scenario, there's other treatments like shockwave therapy. And again, we're talking when you get to the end stage, chronic part of the condition, corticosteroid injections. It can get to obviously sort of past a physio scope. But yeah, that does come under it. Again, calf injuries, plantar fasciitis tend to come hand in hand.
How long did you deal with yours, Paul? It was last year, wasn't it, did you say?
Yeah, it was around about the back end of August, but it probably really wasn't until November time I probably felt as though it had cleared up. But I just really reduced what I was doing quite a bit. And
I was going to say, Paul, do you know what was setting it away? Did you realise?
Well, I think I had gone out. Well, I recall going out in the middle of August in a pair of zero drop shoes on a trail run for about 13 miles. And that was quite it was a rapid increase in what I'd been doing, because I'd been suffering from another niggle in June. So it was a rapid step up in terms of the mileage that I'd been doing. But the fact that I'd gone into a pair of zero drop shoes as well, I think it probably contributed, should we say.
Well, just because you're saying that, that just sort of comes into risk factors, doesn't it, in terms of injury? That you talk obviously about your footwear and then the mileage, 13 miles off the bounce. So obviously those two are a big part in terms of any injury. Previous injuries, obviously, a big part as well. If they've had something that's been going on previously and they've not seen any help, and you keep running, that might creep, yeah. But yeah, you've just obviously named a few of the risk factors.
Yeah, I quite like what you did say, Paul, about the footwear as well. This is something I had a good read into last year, actually, because I used to get a lot of clients coming in and they were asking, does it matter which footwear I wear? Is it specific to certain footwear, specific to certain injuries? They've been to certain running shops and had footwear specifically designed for them. And there's a good physio called Tom Goom, who's known as a running physio.
Yeah.
And he, I'm not sure if you've, yeah, have you heard of him? Probably don't know who he was, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of research into it. And I mean, there's no specific research to say that certain footwear makes you less likely to have an injury. But obviously what we tend to see is changing from, let's say, a supported pair of footwear. We see quite a lot of good supported pairs of ASICS footwear, for example. And then changing over to sort of barefoot running, going from one extreme to the other, tends to trigger, obviously, a response quite often leads to, like we mentioned, tendinopathies, plantar fasciitis, a link of the two. So what I tend to advise people is just try to avoid going from one to the other quickly.
I was always advised, because I don't mind like the zero drop shoes, or you know, it's like a lower offset. But I was always advised, if you are going to them, make that transition gradually. Rather than just, and to be fair, it was just first pair of trail shoes I grabbed off the shelf. Thought, oh yeah, I'll be all right. I've, you know, and I probably hadn't run in them for a good few months, and it, you know, it obviously triggered something or contributed to something anyway. So I should know better. I've been running for about 10 years. I should know better, but you know.
Don't worry, Paul. Like we said, we all do it.
Yeah, we all make mistakes. Just so the main point really with footwear is it's got to be comfy. It's just got to be comfy in terms of when you're running. As long as that's ticked, you shouldn't really have any issues. So obviously, if you go from one extreme to the other, and you're not used to it, then obviously you will trigger something off, and it will be majorly uncomfortable, and it may also alter your natural stride pattern. But if it's a naturally comfortable shoe for yourself, then you shouldn't feel any difference. You should just run and should be okay with it. That's from what I've read anyway, just from like, and translating it over to like the general public, how we give the message over.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, I agree.
Because I saw a post, I'm quite into Instagram now in terms of physios and sports therapists.
I know you're going to
go on then.
You're going to say Meekins?
Yeah, I am.
I was going to say, come on, yeah. He's good, isn't he?
He is good. And I think he cuts a lot of the BS out. Yeah, and he just says it how it is in terms of what we actually should be looking at. And I think the one he mentioned on footwear was a good one, because I think, I've done a lot of modules on biomechanics at uni. And at times I thought, it's getting too much for me. I'm not getting half of this. How it's applied, and then I was thinking about running shops and how they do, they get people on the treadmill, and they kind of keep it in simple terms. So why are we going from going into too much detail where really it should be like that? But I'm going off on a tangent now.
You're like me, Carl. You're quite sort of young and new to it, aren't you? Really, obviously you're doing your masters in physio now, but we're still quite young into it. So like, you get taught certain things, or you try and read into things a bit more, and he just breaks it down. He just says, now, I saw somebody comment on one of his posts and said, look, I want to get better at squats. What sort of isolated exercises can I do that's going to get me better at squatting? And he said, believe it or not, the best exercise for squatting is squatting.
Yeah.
And he just breaks it down. He was out of the you know, all about knee position and like footwear or ankle position, how you're running. But like, sometimes the terrain might be boggy, or you know, you're up and down hills, and it's not as easy as saying, I have to run in this position. You know, if you do the right strength training, you know, decent pair of shoes, and you do everything right, then the rest of it just sort of goes with it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right. We are both new to this, and I think it's very easy to get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
With all the information being chucked at you, and I think it was a kind of a breath of fresh air. And he's not the only one. There are other people that I follow and read up on. Just keeping it simple. So if we can understand it, we can better explain it to the client and patients. So we'll move on anyway. We kind of mentioned some of the stuff already. I just want to see it from your perspective in terms of therapists. What are the barriers you have to face when trying to implement a treatment plan on any sort of patient, maybe a runner in particular, with some of their beliefs or misconceptions they have?
Yeah, I'll sort of get into this one then. I'll start. So, to be fair, I see different therapists, obviously, different. Some people come in, obviously, the internet's like nowadays, they've already read up on something themselves before they've come in. And obviously, don't get there, you know, don't read up on things. This is what I do. Whereas, obviously, I don't know what John might be slightly different. You know, he'll come in and tell you, but I don't mind if people sort of have read up on things because they're interested in it. Obviously, you point them in the right direction. You trusted source, like, you know, chest work and things like that. Keep away from the stuff that it says, you know, your leg's going to fall off tomorrow. But, you know, if they're interested in it, then they're going to get more on board and adhere to what you're telling them, I think. So, generally, getting people to adhere to something is getting them involved in it. If they want to have a read up on something, if they want to contribute, then let them, get them involved, make it interactional.
Yeah, brilliant. I'll chip in as well. It's all right, Corey. I mean, I love treating runners. I'm not just saying this because I'm on a running podcast. But
play to your audience.
I don't know. It's just because when I used to work in a hospital and we used to see runners, it used to be a bit of a sort of a taboo area, really. People didn't like treating runners because they were quite difficult to treat, or they were seen as difficult to treat. And the main reason was obviously because they didn't want to do that deloading that we were talking about. So it caused a challenge before we'd even started. And I think it's because I like a challenge.
I've got a marathon coming up in 4 weeks. I still want to do it. Is that all right?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Somebody coming in, you've got 4 weeks. Can you get rid of the pain now? And there's your challenge. So I think that's why I enjoy treating runners, is because you get the time scales, you get those challenges that you have to overcome. But yeah, I mean, we mentioned earlier, one of the main challenges is getting somebody to deload an injury. The other one is obviously goal setting. I've got quite a good client who's in at the moment, and he runs at an elite level. And I'm not sure exactly his timings for half marathons, but very fast would be the words that I'd say. I mean, he was running twice daily prior to his recent injury. We're talking 6 to 7 days a week, twice daily. He was doing strength and conditioning on top of that, but probably a bad balance at some point. And when he came in, the first thing he said was, how is what you're doing going to get me back to running twice a day? I can't see going from where I am now to getting there. And I was a bit stumped. Me and Jack have spoke about it, and I was a bit like, I've not really got anybody back to an elite level of running before. Somebody who's going for sort of top 10 in half marathon races. But obviously I like the challenge, so I wanted to get him back into it. So we sat down, obviously made a lot of short-term goals that he needs to tick off before we can progress to the next stage of his rehab, and then set that obviously the long-term goal is to get him back to running that frequently without causing a flare-up in the injury that he's got. We're not quite there yet, but we're on the way.
Have you got any other ones? Because I think they're brilliant so far. I was just thinking as well, trying to think of my experience. I obviously, just from placements I've done, I don't know what it's like for you guys, because obviously it's your own private clinic, you have more of a say, or you like to think you've got definitely got a total say, really, how you do things. But in the hospital, time restrictions, you only see them for, obviously, it's even less in hospital, but I think you have like 45 minute, 30 minute slots, don't you?
Half an hour.
So obviously you only see them for that short period of time. You've got to do your subjective, objective assessments, especially if you're seeing them for the first time, and then you've got to diagnose what's actually wrong with them. And that may be a bit of a struggle, depending on how complicated it is. And then you've got to get down to talking with them and obviously going through all this stuff, and then trying to treat them as well at the same time. So I don't know how often it is you come across that kind of time restriction where you think, because obviously you're the pain for this as well.
Yeah.
So in the back of their head, they're going to think it's going to be more money and things like that.
Well, runners, especially runners who run at a decent level, are normally quite good. You understand it might take a while, obviously, the money side of it and everything else. But we're quite lucky that the thing is, the session when you come in to clinic, it's more like a checkpoint than anything else. So people have to understand, and they do generally understand, that the things that you give them to go away and do at home are just as important as the stuff that they're coming in for 5 hours. Because half an hour out of a full week is nothing. You can't magically do something in half an hour to just get something go away completely, especially if you've had pain for 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, you know, plus. So that's more of, in my experience anyways, yes, obviously you're trying to diagnose something straight away. It might not always be possible. You look at the key things that need to improve. It might be the range of motion, it might be the strength, it might be the technique, it might be different things. You make them understand that, you talk about it. You might do some stuff, you'll do some stuff, some hands-on stuff, some exercises, but then it's what can you do over the next week at home that's going to further that progress. And when we catch up next week on 2 weeks, the progress will just keep moving on because you're doing stuff in their own time. People who might just come in, they might just do something half an hour a week. Progress will be slower because they're not doing stuff in their own time.
And you think that's that one of the misconceptions about physio and sports therapy, that when people come in, you think they're just going to get fixed like that?
Sometimes. I think with runners, though, especially if they're running at a decent level, they're quite savvy on injury. It's a lot more easy to sort of talk to them. But yeah, sometimes members of the public, John will know better than me, they'll come in and they might think that, you know, it's a quick fix, you know. Can we do this? Can we do that? And then it's a one session thing. And sometimes you might be able to, but sometimes you can't. We're quite lucky as well that in our clinic we have an on-site sort of studio room. We've got a treadmill, we've got a bike, stationary bike, we've got a top trainer, we've got, you know, all the different machines, so we can take people in and use it. We use software where you can do it and everything else like that, which not everyone's lucky enough to have. So obviously they're the, like we talked about before, the checkpoints. We can do all those things in half an hour, in an hour, or, you know, the first few sessions. And the bulk of the work might be done where, right, go away and do these for me for a week or two. And then you'll advance them, or you'll change them, you'll regress them, whatever. And you catch up again.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of stuff Jack said. I know you were mentioning, Corey, about obviously when you're working in the hospital and sometimes you get sort of half an hour. I mean, I even got less sometimes in sessions, 20 minutes, and you don't have quite long enough and you don't feel like you've given them enough information or you've had a chance to complete your assessment. It is a bit harder, I think, working in an NHS setting for that reason. We get a little, like you said, a little bit more flexibility, or we allow ourselves a bit more flexibility. Sometimes you're only allowed a certain amount of sessions when you're seen in the hospital, which, again, that's sort of out of our hands, isn't it? As physios or clinicians, you'd see somebody as many times as they need if you had the ability to do so. So you've just got to work with what you can. If you've only got 4 sessions with somebody, you know that they need to be doing all these things outside. I would focus on making sure they get the education that they need, and that you emphasise the goals and the plan of getting to those goals. It might mean that you do a little bit less of the hands-on type treatments when you're in that setting, or do a little bit less of the exercise therapies that we get to do, but at least you're getting the point across to the person and you're making the plan for how to get rid of their injury or how to improve it.
I must admit, when I had a torn meniscus 3 years ago, and as part of my rehab, I was accessing a physio through some free appointments through work, but it was limited to 6 appointments. So obviously I wanted to make sure I used those, but we made sure that they were spaced out well enough. I got given some exercises to go and do sort of like in between sessions and things like that. And some of them, I'll have to say, were a little bit tricky, but, you know, my balance isn't brilliant, but I tried. Yeah. You know? And then obviously you'd go back and we'd, as you say, you'd either progress them if I'd, you know, got to a point where I was comfortable, or, you know, it might be a case of try something a bit different or something along those lines. But that physio as well had access to a number of machines and a gym as well. So I felt I got some decent appointments, but I was kind of limited in the number of appointments that I could freely access, shall we say. And, you know, so I think, again, it was probably a case of educating me to go away and then come back again for the next appointment in 2 or 3 weeks' time kind of thing.
I think that the education is the biggest part, like you just said there, Paul. Obviously, in half an hour, you're limited what you could do anyway for half an hour. So if you do stuff in the session, but then they're educating you what you can be doing in your own time, it's going to make a bigger difference, and then it'll speed up your recovery time.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned education. Just before we move on and talk on to the dreaded COVID-19 pandemic, I want to touch on pain education and pain management, because when people get an injury, I've said before, the deloading, they just stop. They also stop out of fear of pain. So when they start moving, they feel in pain and they just want to avoid that at all possibilities. Where really, John, that's not really the best thing to do in most circumstances.
So basically, me and Jack were sort of chatting about this as well, is that pain is a response. So it's an output from the brain, but it's a response to a stimulus, an external stimulus, something that's changed usually. So pain doesn't always equal damage. And I think that's the biggest misconception, is that people think that I'm in pain, something's damaged, I need to stop what I'm doing, stop running, and that's sort of the end of that until I see a physio. That's not the case, but I do still advise seeing a physio first, getting a full assessment, because obviously you need to work out exactly what's going on. A good example, let's use sort of a couple of clinical examples. Somebody could have a tibialis posterior tendinopathy, so the tendon injury we're talking about, and running to a certain degree with a bit of pain isn't the end of the world. Okay, you can run. I tend to advise people to keep the pain level below 5 out of 10. So using your pain scale, sort of 3 or 4 out of 10 is manageable as long as it settles down quite quickly afterwards. But if that person has a stress fracture to the tibia, the plan of action is completely different. So you need to see somebody first, have a full assessment so that you can work out exactly what's going on. But yeah, pain itself doesn't obviously always equal damage. And it's often triggered, like I mentioned, by a stimulus. And we've talked about the stimulus, haven't we? Things like you're changing your running frequency, duration, going from not running for 3 months to going for your half marathon up the mountain with you, with your new trainers on. All these things that can trigger it. I think I got taught quite a good analogy about stubbing your toe. So if you break your toe, you get this really sharp pain. Obviously, you go, you get an X-ray, you found out it's broken, the pain's excruciating, 10 out of 10. But if you walking along, you kick a table leg, you get the same amount of pain initially as you had when you broke your toe. The same sort of pain response goes up to the brain, but all you've done is stub the toe. After so much period of time of not putting weight through the foot, the pain goes away. So that's a bit of an analogy of how pain works. It's the same level of pain that the brain's receiving. The same level of pain is coming out, but the stimulus is different. The actual pathology is completely different.
I mean, the rule of thumb that I was always kind of told, and I'm not too sure how well it stands, you'll tell me one way or the other, but if you're running and the pain subsides after that initial mile, you're okay to continue to go on. But if the pain hasn't gone after the first mile, that's when you stop. Is that the case?
That sounds like a runner's told you that.
I'm sure a runner probably did.
From my experience, sorry, John,
it's okay, you go on.
I mean, again, I was sort of taught using sort of VAS scales and NRS scales, pain scales. So if it's 10 out of 10, don't do something. If it's 1 out of 10, obviously, it's very subjective. So somebody's 3 out of 10 pain might be somebody else's 7 out of 10 pain. But because it's subjective, it's them who's experiencing it. If they're, you know, again, it's subjective, but if they're really quite mild pain doing something, it's not even pain, it's more discomfort, but they can do something quite easily, then they can carry on and do it if it's going to benefit them. Obviously, if they're going to be doing something and they're saying, ow, that really hurts, then, I mean, it sounds common sense, but you would just reduce that, change it, or just stop it.
It's just listeners have common sense. Sorry.
Yeah, we'll scroll back. That was one of the challenges, Gary. Go back to that one.
Yeah.
But no, I think the other good point you made, Corey, was about sort of people avoiding things because of pain. So you get this fear avoidance that I think a lot of runners get, or a lot of runners that I've treated. So they'll come in and they won't want to return to the same level of running. Well, they will, but they'll be scared to do so. Or they'll be scared to do a specific exercise that might benefit them because they've done it previously and it's triggered the pain response. So that's obviously our job, isn't it? To get in and work out what level we can get you doing that exercise, what level we can get you running. And that's where your goal setting and things comes back in, because you make realistic goals to get to rather than just saying progressively return to running, because every runner will then go out and try and smash a personal best in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It almost sounds as though there's an element of psychology in all of this as well, though. And obviously trying to, you know, work with the athlete to, just to get them onto your wavelength rather than out of their own.
Definitely, definitely. That's part of the challenge that we like, Paul.
So, moving on now, I think I think it's important to kind of talk about the COVID-19 pandemic and the impact it has on, I'd say it's physical and mental, but I think for now we'll just focus mainly on the physical health, because I think if we dive into the mental health, I think that's a whole different episode in itself, and something I do actually plan on touching in this season as well. But for now, lads, the pandemic's also been going on for nearly a year now. Have you seen the impact in the clinic in terms of people coming in terms of like they're not, it could go two ways. It could go like they're not really doing much exercise, or they used to go to the gym a lot and they're not going, but now they can't go to the gym. So they found a new love for running. Mm. And obviously, because they're a novice runner, even though they might be a healthy person, a fit person, they're doing too much. Have you seen either of those type of scenarios in the clinic?
I've seen all of them, really. I feel like everything sort of flipped upside down. So like you mentioned there, people who were either in an active job are now working from home. So they're spending more time, sort of sedentary time, sat at a desk or in a position they're not used to. So then we're getting people coming in with pain and injuries because of that. People who usually would exercise, but now the gyms are shut, so they can't do what they enjoy doing, classes and things like that, or swimming or whatever it is. So they've now completely doing nothing. So again, sedentary, which leads to a lot of issues. Or you've got, like you said, people going the other direction and doing 10 times the amount of running or cycling or something outdoor that they're not used to doing. But now, like you said, we're a year into it, we're starting to see the longer effects of it as well. Mm. Things like people increase weight gain, so people putting on weight. Again, I won't delve too much into the psychological side of it because it's not really my area, but we are seeing the effects of that as well, and that can affect obviously people's pain levels and perception of pain, and obviously the likelihood to return to exercise or activity reduces as well if they're not feeling in the best mood or any other issues going on. But the other thing, I think, with the lockdowns and the way that they've fallen, we're getting this sort of, I'm going to make up a term here and call it a load gap. So that's not an actual term, but we're basically
getting see that in studies next year.
Say again, you heard it here first.
It'll be John Flynn's load gap.
That's it. You heard it here first. But you're getting sort of periods of 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks where people are reducing load or increasing load massively, so that they're running loads and then they're going back to what they were previously, or they're sitting at a desk and then going back to increasing at a high level. So we're getting then the injuries when that gap is reduced. So it's not just from people being sedentary at home, we're getting it when they return to activity. So we're seeing these massive sort of peaks and troughs in injuries, which obviously keeps us busy, but it's completely different to any previous years I've seen.
How best is it to kind of manage that? Is it to kind of try and make sure the client is doing a kind of consistent training plan? Because obviously you've got this peak and troughs, which is sometimes might be out of their control with the lifestyle. But I think that's another thing, lifestyle factors as well. Do you try to talk to them about it and educate them how best to kind of manage that in a long-term way to try and avoid these type of injuries?
Yeah, I mean, I've chatted to get quite a lot of patients that I've seen long term, and obviously I've seen them since pre-pandemic, seeing them right the way through, and I'll chat to them about different ways of increasing your activity level. So I mean, we're talking about running, but activity doesn't need to be running or cycling or swimming. It can be walking or even doing more around the house, taking the stairs instead of the lift, all those sort of things, and just trying to increase the activity level generally, so that we're not sedentary through the day, getting up and doing exercises rather than sitting at the desk, sort of setting little goals like that that are achievable through the day. And again, I know we always go on about goal setting as physios, but trying to set people to set long-term goals that are realistic, not trying to run the Manchester Marathon in April or May or whenever it is, when you know it's not going to go ahead, sort of picking. Yeah, it sounds yeah.
obvious, but already been postponed.
There you go. There you go. So you could have read up on that one. Well, I'm supposed to be doing the Berlin Marathon with my girlfriend in September, but that one's been postponed from last year. So fingers crossed, it happens this year. Yeah.
Might be a chance. Might be a chance.
Yeah. Jack, have you got anything to say?
Yeah, just to reiterate John's point that obviously the effects of the pandemic, weight gain is the biggest one I've seen, because especially with sort of the background of sport for me is that with all the sporting activities and the, you know, your team sports like football, rugby, all the sort of teams, organised sports, with them being put on hold or cancelled indefinitely, whatever, that a lot less people are coming in with sporting injuries through, you know, football knocks or rugby knocks or cricket or anything like that. It's more sort of the entry if you've not been doing a lot or if they're changing to running, like you've said. Well, especially the weight gain, I've noticed the biggest difference. And it's just reiterating what John said, that, you know, yes, they might not be able to do the usual levels in the gym and everything else, but you can still be doing things around the house, going on walks or runs and just building it up. It's just a case of just building it up gradually. That's the main idea. The issue is some people go, you know, full metal or don't do anything, and it's just sort of decreasing or increasing gradually.
Yeah, full metal, definitely. I've definitely seen that. I think another thing, maybe I'm going to talk from my own personal experience. I unfortunately got COVID-19. I think it was late October, early November, and like I got the symptoms, and I was absolutely knocked for six for about 2 weeks. But even the period after that, I'd say at least 4 to 6 weeks, I was struggling just to get through the working day, and I was working, by the way. I wasn't just lying around doing nothing because I'm a student. I was actually doing something. I was on placement, okay? So I know people listen and be like, you're just a student, you're a student, Corey. But it's like, no, sometimes I'm a student, sometimes I'm full-time, just in whatever. But I was struggling to just try and build up my tolerance back for running. I found that breathing, just general breathing, was hard. And I think there'll be people out there listening to this who might have unfortunately gone through something similar myself. So what advice would you kind of give to them?
At the moment, obviously, we don't know the long-term effects of COVID. And I know they're doing a lot of studies. One of my ex-colleagues is actually doing some studies into it about the long-term effects on your respiratory system following COVID, to do with activities as well. She's a respiratory physio. But we can't really make too many comments until we know the ins and outs of the long-term effects of it. Again, like Jack mentioned previously, I know it sounds obvious, but progressively trying to build up a tolerance, whether it's, like mentioned, walking up and down the stairs, walking to the shops, whatever it is that you can do to progressively build up that tolerance back to where it was. You're better off starting at that level and progressively building up than sitting and staying at the level that you're at.
Good advice, see. So I think from a coach's point of view as well, Paul, and listening to what they said, is there anything you would change in terms of your approach to some of the runners you look after? Even though I know you've been running for 10 years and you've got so much knowledge.
To be fair, I'm overly cautious probably with anybody that I'm sort of actively coaching. And it's more a question of trying to rein them in more. My own running, because I'm not accountable to anybody, and I'm not a coach of athletes. I always say, just, you know, do as I say, but don't do as I do, because I know that my easy runs are probably harder than they should be. I know that I maybe do too many sessions a day. I know I go out and run 13 miles, and I've run 13 miles for a while in a 0 millimeter drop pair of shoes. But in terms of my athletes, and I'm sure if you speak to some, Corey, they'll bear out. I'm probably more the other side, and I'm trying to rein them in a bit more and trying to get them to lessen the load a little bit. And just, you know, their sessions are hard, but I build in 3 or 4 days recovery between their sessions, and I expect what they do in between to be very easy. I expect the easy days to be easy, the hard days to be hard. So in terms of the balance that I bring to the athletes, I hope that I'm doing the right thing. But, you know, so all your athletes are different as well. You know, sort of like dealing with a 60-year-old athlete is very different to dealing with a 28-year-old athlete. 28-year-old can probably do, I think I mentioned this last time, 3 decent sessions a week, you know, as long as you space them out. Whereas the 60-year-old, you might be looking at 3 decent sessions over the course of 10 to 14 days. So, you know, in terms of the loadings, it's I think age is a big factor as well.
was just going to say, Paul made quite a good point there at the end about saying, sort of, do as I say, not as I do. But you were saying about your training days being sort of more intense on your rest days. But you've obviously been running for 10 years at a good level. You're coaching. You've got a very good knowledge of running and injuries because you've obviously had a couple by the sounds of it. But you know your body and you know how you can train better than anyone, okay, better than any physio that you would see. So you know that yourself, and that comes with experience. So I think experience obviously comes into it, whether it's treating injuries or running in general. Like you're saying, somebody who's obviously fairly new to running, you wouldn't chuck them into the same sort of intensity on rest days as what you're doing. So the same goes with injuries and diagnosing and treating them.
Jack, anything to add, mate?
Yeah, I would just say to the people who are listening, whether they're season runners, many of them probably aren't, or if they're looking to get running, just do it. Get running. My mum and my parents are doing Calc for 5K challenge that has been a big thing in this lockdown, trying to get people who have done no running at all over the course of X amount of weeks. I'm not sure how they do a 5K, get progressive, building it up. And that's the perfect way. Anything like that. Build it up, get the right advice, and just do it.
We've nearly done an hour, which to me is about the perfect amount of time. John and Jack, thank you very much for coming on and giving up some of your time and sharing some of your knowledge and experience. It's been amazing having you on. And
you're very welcome, Corey.
Yeah, thank you for having us on. And I'll be picking both of your brains when it comes to running this marathon.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I've been keeping an eye on how you do.
Are you on Strava, John?
I'm not, but I suppose I'll have to get it, so you keep an eye on.
Yeah, that's the thing.
If it's on Strava, it doesn't count.
To everyone listening, thanks for tuning in. I was blown away by the numbers last episode, so I'm sure this episode will be something similar. But yeah, thanks for listening.